Aaron, how
Oh, listen to that accent. Say something else.
are you? How are you? No, I'm just being silly. No, this is how I really talk, but it was I'm an actress, so I do weird character voices and I don't really even know what my accents are. I just make them up.
Put it there, it sounded like something like new. I can't do it, but the New York accent. And
Oh yeah, like how you doing? I can't do it very well, but I just make stuff up. I make everything up. I don't know.
so happy to talk to you.
Oh yes, yes.
Kamala Ramalia. I love your name too. It just rolls off my tongue. It's delicious. It's so delicious. And speaking of delicious, Pamela is an award-winning author and podcaster, and her podcast is fantastic. It's called Food Is Not a Four-Letter Word. There you go. I knew we'd get delicious in there somewhere. She teaches women how to ditch the diet drama and create a body and life they love. And you and I have both been to the University of Life. I cracked up when I read this. Pamela earned her PhD in personal transformation with an emphasis in body image, self-esteem, and weight loss from the very prestigious School of Hard Knocks.
Yes, I do.
And her signature model of alignment and happy calories don't count method have helped women from all across the world find freedom from food and body shame while optimizing physical results, which isn't surprising because Camilla is a princess of Pilates. She is a classically trained Pilates instructor, and I'm going to ask you later on about what the difference is between the real Pilates and what is now commonly known as Pilates.
Yes.
And she is an actress, as she just mentioned, and a model, which is also fascinating given the whole happy calories and body expectations of that.
Yes.
And when you find her at a checkout line, if you're standing behind her, somebody's bound to ask her, "Didn't I see you on TV?" I love the book. Camilla was kind enough to send through a copy, and it's a sequel. Her first book, Happy Calories, which you can find on her website. And this is a really easy one to remember. It's basically happycalories.com. I mean, could they get any easier? And her first book, Happy Calories Don't Count, will blow your mind. But we're specifically here more today to talk about her sequel, which is Food Is Not a Four-Letter Word. Why did you write a follow-up to Happy Calories?
Well, it's interesting. I thought when I wrote Happy Calories Don't Count, I thought I'd said everything that I needed. Like, hello, happy calories don't count. Can I make it any more obvious? And when I was at an event, learning how to take my message out into the world, because it's not just about what you know, it's how to connect with people. How do you do a podcast? How do you create a community? All of that stuff. I was at an event and this woman who was checking us in was so gracious and so kind. And so just, out of gratitude, I gave her a copy of Happy Calories Don't Count. It was the only thing I had that I could give her, so I just gave it to her. And she actually hunted me down like 4 days into the conference and was just like, oh my God, this book is amazing, but how do I do this? And it was a really interesting experience for me because I thought I'd been very clear in Happy Calories Don't Count. It's basically a memoir of my pain and drama and then what I did to heal myself from that. And I didn't realize that what was so clear to me, because I'd actually lived this and I've had certain truths just sink into my bones, other people couldn't just grab onto that and take it and run with it. And so I'd spent, maybe about a decade coaching and teaching and speaking about Happy Calories Don't Count and the principles. And what really got me to write the book was all the stuff I started seeing on social media. All the stuff about diet culture, this, or the body image movement in particular, really irritates me sometimes because, in their efforts to empower women, which is a good thing, we want to feel good about ourselves. We want to feel good in our bodies and about our bodies, and we want to live our best lives. But their ways of doing that never really address and heal the underlying problem. And I was finding myself at odds with a lot of people and didn't have a way to share what I knew in the context of what other people were offering. So, you know, I just wrote another book.
And I agree with you, the body positivity movement, I understand where they're coming from and how wonderful we are making strides, but it's still people telling me what to think about my body.
Exactly. Exactly.
I stepped onto a scale at the gym because I was actually checking water retention. I was actually, because I had a feeling I was dehydrated. And if you jump on a scale, it's a really easy way to tell. And I had a woman shame me for jumping on a scale. She had no idea why I was getting on it. I was looking for data. I was looking for data. And I knew I obviously, which I could have probably listened to my body, which would have told me I was dehydrated. But I was also trying a new medication. It was data. And I was shamed for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand why it's such a complex, and she, the woman meant really, really well, but she was still wanting to control my behavior around my body, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I think that there are two, well, maybe more than two, but that there are a lot of different dynamics at play, particularly right now in the current moment, with the social media, with people having access to anything and ideas going viral. It's such a weird topic because I never intend to get political. But there's so much that is going on in the current moment about body positivity and what it means to be a woman and bashing the patriarchy, you know, and the Me Too movement and all of this stuff that comes up around it, that it seems to me it's a lot of it is a similar dynamic getting played out in different types of specific fields within the culture, but it fundamentally comes down to a personal empowerment perspective. We're all trying to figure out how we can feel good about ourselves. And so some people are taking this attempt to feel good about themselves, to push against what currently is, but then make other people do it too. So that then it's kind of making them feel better about themselves because they were right and they can tell other people what to do and then make other people, you know, all of this stuff. I think it has such deep, deep psychological undertones and currents, and why I wrote the book and why I started my own podcast, so that I could actually have the time and the space to get into these really deep, deep conversations about what's really going on at the root that then influences and informs all the crazy behavior that you see, where people shaming you for stepping on a scale to get some data, or, you know, something you'll see on social media and all this other stuff that's going on.
Thank you so much for creating the platform where you can do that. I've had even people try to modify my food, trying to, you know, if you say no to something, it'll often come with a barrage of bullying to try and get you to eat something. It really is completely and utterly insane in so many different ways. And one of the things I love about your book is you talk about how we don't give up trying, we don't control our body. We can't control our body. Trying to white knuckle it and control our body, especially what blew my mind was, I actually hadn't thought of it this way, but I do, every time I look at a piece of every time I do look at food, I associate it with calories. And every time I exercise, I associate it with burning calories. I don't eat food for food's sake. I'm not an Epicurean. I don't particularly get a buzz out of food. I'd be quite happy on vitamins all day long. And I do, there's exercise I definitely do because I want a specific result instead of actually wanting to be in connection with my body.
Right.
So it was like, oh my gosh, Carmela, I have not been thinking of food as food or exercise as movement.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because, again, this is when you ask, well, why did I write a sequel? This is part of the reason that I did that, because in the decade plus that I had been learning about how to get my message out there. So I had gone to, before COVID, you know, I would go to those in-person networking groups, like the women's business networking groups or the BNIs or the Chamber of Commerce or anything like that. And people would ask me what it is that I do. And what I found was that people weren't really hearing me. And people had different some of my friends had different takes about why people weren't hearing me. Some people would just write it off as, oh, you know, you're tall, you're an actress, you're a model, you're too pretty. No one's going to pay attention to what you have to say because they don't think that you can relate to anything that they're going through. And I'm like, hello, do you have any idea what I've been through in my life? If you think that I have looked good on the outside, that has come from a lifetime of pain, shame, and drama around my body and my weight, like life-threatening hospitalizations for an eating disorder. And the glow you see in me now that you want to emulate is because I've healed it. So wouldn't you want to think that you might want to hear what I have to say? But the other thing that I noticed is that people make assumptions about what you're going to say because this diet and exercise model is drilled into us. I mean, it is so insidious. It's part of every single thought, every fabric, every thread of our society, everywhere. It's literally like living in the Matrix, you know, like from the movie, that people will assume that, oh, because I'm happy and I'm the happy calories don't count girl. Oh, I'm going to tell you about being happy while you eat. And if you just are happy or happy with yourself, then all this stuff is going to just magically appear. Or I talk about connecting with your body. Oh, that's just intuitive eating or whatever. And I would hear how people would respond to the message that I was trying to communicate. And it's taken a lot of time and it's taken a lot of patience and a lot of hits to my self-esteem as being able to communicate an idea that what's happening is people are so ingrained in this diet and exercise model that they can't even see another way out of it. So for example, intuitive eating is still framed within the context of the diet and exercise model because people will say, oh, well, you just listen to your body and then you'll naturally want to eat the good food. You know, and there's still a judgment around that. You'll still naturally want to eat the good food. Or if we're talking about emotional eating, people will go to therapy or something like that because they understand there's this emotional component to it. So if we personal development and we do our emotional work so we can heal our mommy issues and our daddy issues, well, then we won't want to seek comfort in food. So we won't want to emotionally eat, which then in that diet and exercise model is bad because that's going to somehow upset that caloric balance sheet. And what I do is I just come in and I decimate the diet and exercise model. It's like it's an illusion. It's like people are in this room and there's a projector and there's this big bugaboo called diet and exercise or body image or feeling bad about yourself or whatever it is. And so everybody is in the room and they feel bad about themselves, or then they're going to go to war with it, or they're going to try to figure out how to work with it or somehow manage it so that they can feel good about themselves. And then what I come in is I come in and I pull the plug out of the electric socket. And I'm like, nope, it was just an illusion. It does not exist. And when that doesn't exist, you don't have to fight against it. You don't have to tell anybody else what to eat. You don't have to worry about what you eat. You know that everything that you thought you knew isn't really true. And the way to figure out what is true for you is it's simple. It's connect with your body. But that happens at such a deeper level, such a cellular level, a deeper spiritual level than what is often the surface level platitudes of the intuitive eating. Because I've seen intuitive eating coaches do these weird things like hunger scales and then that just turns into a mind game. So that's the closest, I don't know what you would call it, reference point that people would assume that I teach. But it really is a lot deeper than that, which is, you know, why I had to write another book.
And we'll be talking about your fabulous alignment model. Thank you so much for your honesty and your vulnerability around your eating disorder. It's going to touch so many lives. I remember you saying in the book, and do correct me if I've got this wrong, but sometimes when people are recovering from an eating disorder, diet comes back up again. Diets are given to people. They're rewarded if they actually eat. It's foods associated with good behavior.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And whole model of diet, putting people on diets when they're recovering from an eating disorder.
Yeah, it's like trying to put a drug addict back on heroin to, you know, make them be okay with being able to have drugs in the world, you know, kind of thing. It's crazy. Yeah.
In 12-step programs, we say that you can abstain from alcohol, you can abstain from drugs, but things like food,
yeah,
books, people,
yeah,
you not abstain from. You're not locking the tiger in a cage. You're living in a cage with a tiger.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why, so what happens is with those other types of maladaptive behaviors, the drugs, the alcohol, the gambling, you know, that kind of things you can actually live without, you can build a recovery model around taking it out of your environment or abstaining from it in somehow, or developing skills and tools to have a different circle of friends and ways to manage your emotions so that you don't act out in that certain way. But just like you said, with food, with sex, with relationships and people, the things that are part of the vital human experience that are coded into our DNA for being human and living in this physical life, you can't cut them out. You have to learn how to engage with them and deal with them. And the way to deal with them productively is through a relationship-based model. And that diet and exercise model, it's a transaction-based model. And so there's always going to be that little catch-22 that doesn't quite work when people are thinking in terms of diet and exercise.
I suppose we can, I mean, there is a program that suggests you do abstain from sex, by the way, but why would you want to?
Well, and then what happens if you abstain from sex and then you are in a loving, committed relationship, which is serving a whole myriad of needs of being human. You know, it's part of the human experience, authentic connection with a human being, sharing your life with someone, you know, whether you're married and you've already had children or, you know, whatever that situation is. And then that other person in the relationship, that's part of their physicality, their ability to express themselves as being a human, and then you can't engage with them in that way, then the relationship also suffers.
And I want to apologize for being facetious. There are people who deeply struggle with sexual issues and mm-hmm. they relief through abstinence and through working their way back to healthy relationships, and they have suffered from extreme repercussions. So
yeah,
I would like, there is a 12-step program that specifically relates to that, and that may be of help to people, that may be able to provide a solution. But as to circle back what you were saying, we want holistic, we want to integrate, we want to be able to integrate food, movement, things that we physically need to survive into our lives through a model, through your amazing model of alignment. Would you take me back a little bit further back into the past? What was can you tell me about the lettuce burrito?
Oh, yeah. All right. So that was the one of the first little, for lack of a better word, cracks in the dam. So if you are suffering from an eating disorder or any other kind of addiction for that matter, but I'm the expert on eating disorder, so, you know, we'll focus on that. Even if the behavior seems crazy, you know, and it just doesn't make sense, it makes sense to you. You're doing it for a reason. You're doing it because it is helping you cope somehow. You're doing it because it is giving you something more than what it's taking away from you, whatever that reason is. And so I say this all the time when I'm speaking with people who are either trying to heal specifically from an eating disorder, or they love someone who is dealing with that kind of thing. The healing has to come within them. You can't just lock them up in a treatment center and think, oh, it's going to be better. One, the treatment centers don't really know what they're doing. And two, the healing does have to come from within them. And what that means is that they have to find something that they want more than what the eating disorder is giving them, or they have to want something more than the eating disorder is taking it away from them. And in my case, what saved my life, literally saved my life, was acting. I was a young girl. I was in Florence going to school, and I got scouted as a model. And so I finished out my year there, played around with modeling in Italy, and came back and thought, hey, some guy in Italy thought I could do this. You know, why don't I try it out here? And I was so green. When I signed with my agency, I didn't realize what media talent meant. I just thought I was going to be a model. And media talent means, you know, like commercials. And so she sent me out on this commercial audition. It was for Taco Time, which is a local chain of little fast food Mexican restaurants around here. And my audition, I was supposed to smile at the camera and say, tasty. And so, you know, I smiled at the camera and said, tasty. And for whatever reason, they liked me. So they brought me back for that callback. Well, in the callback, they had a lettuce burrito, a burrito shell filled with lettuce on the side of the table. And my direction was I was supposed to take a bite of the lettuce burrito and then smile at camera and say, tasty. And I couldn't do it. Like, when I saw what they were wanting me to do, like, I completely had an internal panic attack. I don't know if they could actually see the tears running down my face, but my eyes were starting to well. It was like this thing that I wanted so badly. I wanted to be this actress. And what I could not do was take a bite of a lettuce burrito, because and at this point, and this is what's really interesting, at this point, I'd already been in 3 eating disorder treatment programs. I'd already been, quote unquote, in recovery. But because, like you were saying, that they still make it about the food, it's still food is rewarded, it's still a diet, you know, this transaction-based diet and exercise model. I'm sitting here in a situation, and in my quote unquote recovery plan, I'm supposed to eat 3 meals a day, and I'm supposed to eat certain types of food during these 3 meals a day. And then I'm quote unquote in recovery, and I'm healed from my eating disorder because now I'm quote unquote eating healthy and all this stuff. And so here I am in the situation where it's outside of the times I'm supposed to eat. So, oh my goodness, now am I relapsing? Am I not in recovery anymore? And it's also, I don't know how many calories are in this burrito shell filled with lettuce. And if I don't know how many calories are in this burrito shell filled with lettuce, I don't know how many extra minutes I'm going to have to spend on the treadmill to burn them off. And then, oh my goodness, what if I get fat? And then, oh my goodness, what if it's a slippery slope? What if I go down into like a binge cycle or a starvation cycle or whatever? And it was just a mess. And needless to say, I did not get the job. But that was the first crack in the dam. That was like, oh, I really need to get better for me, because there's no way I can actually be an actress and do this. And then the next story that's not in the book, but it's pretty profound, is I came home from during spring break during my senior year, and my agent had called. And she said, they're shooting this movie Singles here. And, you know, we missed all the auditions. You were out of town, so you don't have, there aren't any day player roles for you, but would you be willing to go in and be an extra? And I'm like, sure. I'd never been on a big budget movie set before. Why not? And so the first rule of acting is never be late to set, right? So my call time was at 6 a.m. And in my little head, you know, and granted, I'd been in treatment 3 times. My call time was at 6 a.m. So I had to get up at 2 a.m. so that I could work out for an hour and a half before I took my shower and got ready and drove and was a half hour early to set, because you're never late to set. So I'd been up since 2 a.m. and I'd already worked out for an hour and a half. And I get there at 6 a.m. and they have tables. Wow. And tables of food, just a free-for-all, just like boxes of donuts, bags of bagels, fruit, eggs, just like anything, granola bars, anything and everything you could imagine, just tables and tables of food. And I was so hungry, and I couldn't eat because it wasn't time for me to eat yet. And it took every ounce of energy that I had just to sit there and exist and not eat. And I'm watching, you know, off to the left as the director's talking to the actress and they're lighting the scene and she has to say her lines and hit her mark and do her turn or whatever she's supposed to do. And I'm realizing that I do not have the mental, emotional, spiritual capacity to be able to even do that because I am so hungry and trying so hard not to eat. So you need to have something you want more to be able to break that lynch holder, that death grip that an eating disorder can have over you. And then once you do that, well, you know, then it's another road that doesn't have to necessarily be hard or lonely, but it is a personal, it's a deeply personal path of personal development.
Hey, I was amused by the tasty.
Yeah. Tasty. Tasty.
not the story. I just want to go back and hug that young woman. And while you were talking, I was thinking of being, for those who are newly sober and Alcoholics Anonymous and having to be in that situation and somebody saying, here, you know, drink wine in front of the camera. And it's, I could relate to, I haven't had your experience, but I could relate to the terror.
Uh-huh.
The terror of slipping and the excruciating pain that could follow with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, movie sets, they don't skimp on their food, that's for sure.
Yeah. And,
would you tell us about your incredible alignment method? There's
something
which includes, you know, where your thoughts, your feelings, your
body, your
actions. But I love the way that you had it, where you had food, exercise, thoughts, feelings, and belief. And you explained it in terms of source energy. Would you tell me more about that?
Yeah. That model came into my mind, you know, which is like a little gift from the heavens. In two ways. One, I was watching The Fifth Element, and you know, at the end of the movie, when, you know, Mila Jovovich is in the middle and, you know, all that light goes through her because Bruce Willis has told her that he loves her, and all that white light kills the dark energy. It was a combination of that and teaching Pilates. And what I had noticed as I was, you know, doing my own healing, when I'm teaching Pilates, it's a very intimate experience in the sense that I'm witnessing the relationship a woman has with her body, you know, whether she knows it or not. And a lot of people, a lot of women have troubled relationships with their body, and also just in the things that they say and the things that they apologize for. And I would often hear, because as a Pilates instructor, I'm thinking about alignment. I'm thinking about your physical alignment, having your hips square over your knees, your shoulders, everything. And when you're in physical alignment, biomechanically, your body moves with more power, with more freedom, grace, and ease, because it's moved. It's moving how it was designed to move. And when you're out of alignment, like your knee is wacky or this is wacky, and the system doesn't quite work as effectively or as efficiently as it could. And I was playing around with that. It's just musing in the back of my head with all the contradictions that I hear people say about food and exercise, and even things that I had experienced myself. It's like, I really, really want this. Oh, but it's full of calories, or, oh, it's full of fat grams. And so then you either don't eat it and you feel deprived, or you feel bad about yourself for eating it, or you don't eat it and you feel deprived, or you do eat it and then you feel bad about yourself for eating it and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, now I'm going to get fat or whatever. So there's all of this contradiction going on inside your being. And what I had known from my own personal development and, you know, random experiences that I've had in my own life where crazy miracle things happened. Like I did a supersize me experiment, you know, kind of in reverse. I had a month when I was crazy busy doing three jobs and a show outside of town and starting my first role on a feature film. And all I could do was have fast food three times a day for a month. And I lost 7 pounds doing that, which makes absolutely no sense. So I would play around with all of these experiences that I'd had and what I'd heard other people talk about. And it's like, no, you're not just a physical body. You're also an emotional and a psychological and a spiritual being too. There's that other part of you that needs to be addressed. But what's happening is that in personal development and therapy, we're trying to address that so that you can quote unquote be successful on a diet or exercise program. And that's not what that's about. That stuff is about bringing you into harmony with your whole being. So just like with Pilates, when you're physically aligned and, you know, that bioelectrical impulse that runs through you helps you do things with greater force and strength and flexibility and ease. When you bring your whole being into that system, your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs, your actions, all of you is more powerful and more effective in the things that you want. And I called it source energy because I don't really know what to call it. I think the model is valid, regardless of your nature of the universe, because I personally, in my own personal life, have a few atheists in my life. But that model still works because you have the bioelectrical impulses that animate the human body. Like if these things aren't going on in your body, you cease to live, you know, your body starts to decompose. And then I have other friends in my life that are really in the spiritual personal development route. And they talk about, you know, Abraham Hicks and source energy and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yep, that still works. And then I have other friends that are more faith-based in the traditional idea of God or Jesus or, you know, what, or Allah or whatever their particular God is. And I'm like, yep, that works too. It's we are beings in this world that have thoughts and feelings and beliefs, these emotional, spiritual, psychological aspects of ourselves, as well as a physical body living in the 3D world. And all of them need to integrate harmoniously for us to be the best, most powerful, most authentic, expressive, but also the most effective people we can be.
Oh, just basking in that for a minute. The alignment model talks about connecting with your body, enjoying your food, exercising daily to connect and tune and clearing the channel. And I thought of you this morning because I worked out, and I didn't work out to burn calories. I worked out because anxiety was sitting on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And I felt so much more at peace afterwards because I'd listened to my body and my body said, yeah, go and do some movement. But can you talk me through how you connect with your body, then you enjoy food, you exercise daily to connect and tune,
and
you clear the channel? I know you've alluded to a lot of this.
But— oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that whole idea of the model of alignment where I'm talking about your thoughts and your feelings and your beliefs and your actions are all congruent. Mm. And I think this model works for anything, because with food and exercise specifically, since I'm talking about diet, I usually have like food, exercise, thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and actions all in alignment, with that idea being that, like, if you think the cookie's bad for you, you better not eat the cookie, because to eat the cookie if you think it's bad for you makes contradictory energy. But if you've done enough personal development and you've had enough life experience that you think, a cookie isn't necessarily going to be so bad, enjoy the cookie. So it's not about the action. It's about being congruent with the action. And that's step one. And I call it embrace a model of alignment, because essentially at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're unbrainwashing ourselves from that conventional cultural diet and exercise model. And if I don't give you another way to look at the universe or another possibility to explain how you might be seeing results or changes in your body, if I don't give you an alternative solution, you're just going to default go back into thinking of in terms of diet and exercise, because our brains abhor a vacuum and that's what's constantly knocking at the door. So that model of alignment is initially a way for you to have the courage and the strength and a framework to hang on to so that you can fully just let that diet and exercise model go. And then when you let that diet and exercise model go, an amazing thing happens. You sort of instinctively connect with your body. The diet and exercise model demands that you disconnect from your body in order to quote unquote be successful. Because in the diet and exercise model, you can't just eat because you're hungry. You have to eat because this is what the diet says. Or you can't just move your body because you feel like it. You have to burn those calories, you know, you have to lose that weight. So that sets it up so that we're constantly disconnected from our body and we're constantly afraid of our body. So by doing step one and getting rid of the diet and exercise model and having something else to think about, that model of alignment, that other framework to offer something to hold on to, you can connect with your body. And the fastest, most effective way to really connect with your body is to simply take a deep breath. So let's do that together. Take a deep breath in. And do another one. And that's all it takes, is just take a deep breath. Take a beat, take a moment, take a beat, take a breath. And you are connected to your body. And your body instinctively knows what to eat and what to do for exercise. Your body, because it has that source energy flowing through it, that bioelectrical impulse, whatever it is flowing through that, that energy of life that's living in every single cell, excuse me, to keep it alive, your body knows how to create an optimized state of health and vitality. And so we connect with our body and we follow its guidance. And then that part about enjoying your food, I threw that in there because, you know, if it's kind of a checks and balances thing. If you're not enjoying your food, that's a sign that something's off, because most people wouldn't enjoy their food because they think they're going to have to pay a price for it later. They're going to feel guilty about it. They think it's going to make them fat. They think they're going to have to make up for it at the gym. Or they're legitimately eating something they don't like because some stupid diet is telling them that they have to eat that. And so if you're not enjoying your food, that's a clue to you that something is off, that you're back in diet drama land thinking or something like that. And so that's a simple, just like, enjoy your food, because why not? You know, there is no price to pay to eat, and your body's telling you that it wants something to eat. So enjoy what your body's asking for. And then moving your body every day. This is always really an interesting one, because it's not a back door into the diet and exercise model. I see this a lot with other types of programs that want to just change your mindset, and they're going to make it a mind body thing or an integrative thing or something like that. And essentially what it is it's the diet and exercise transaction based model, but they're somehow trying to trick your mind into being okay with it, or trick your mind into being happy with it, so that you can be successful on that model. The move your body every day from a happy calories don't count approach is coming from a relationship based model. You're cultivating a relationship with your body, because your body knows what it needs to eat, how much it needs to eat, when, how it needs to move, all of that other stuff. And so by taking the time to engage with your body in conscious daily physical activity, it's kind of like a date. In a relationship-based model, you're getting to know your body. You're getting to learn to trust your body. You're getting to learn that your body has your back, and that you can follow its impulses without negative repercussions. And you get to feel what it feels like when you work muscles and stretch muscles and heart rates. So you get to learn what it's like to actually become embodied and have your experience of your entire life from within your body, not just your head. And then you are more in tune with yourself, your spidey senses, your gut instincts, all of that stuff comes with you. And that's why we want to have this dedicated time every day where you get to know your body and you connect with it. And so you're moving in ways that you enjoy. You're moving in ways that feel good to you. If you like to walk, walk. If you do not like going to the gym, stop going to the gym. All of that stuff that you do where you think you need to do something because it's going to burn calories, but you hate doing it, that's another place where you're out of alignment. That's contradiction. And we're cleaning all that stuff up. We're making everything harmonious, everything congruent. So do the things you like, you know? Go for a swim. If you like those hardcore workouts at the gym, go do those. But if you don't. Do whatever it is you like. But do it from a place of curiosity and respect, where you're doing it to engage with your body to understand what it's about. And then that last little step in there, that clearing the channel piece, that is about using personal development, self-help, and spiritual skills, skills that are vitally important in life, but using them in the context of the relationship-based model of the happy calories don't count approach. Like I had mentioned earlier, that in that diet drama land, in that diet and exercise model that's transaction-based, calories are a currency of exchange. You have to pay a price to eat. So you're always trying to manage that caloric balance sheet type of thing. What they do is they talk about personal growth and self-help so that you won't want to eat the food. You know, you're going to heal your daddy issues so that you feel good about yourself. So you're not going to try to eat the brownies when you get home from work because you feel bad, or you're afraid of intimacy, or, you know, whatever that reason is, because they think that eating for reasons other than physical hunger is bad. Whereas in the happy calories approach, we're doing all of those spiritual and those personal development skills because they're an important part of being a fully actualized human being in relationship. So if you have a bad day at work, you learn, hopefully really quickly, that you don't come home from work and take that frustration out on your family, because then that creates a very unpleasant home environment. So you use those skills so that when life's challenges come up, you can deal with them in a way that doesn't impact the relationship you have with your body, because your relationship with your body is just like any other relationship that you would have. And to circle back to that emotional eating thing, one thing that I think is really powerful that will really help illustrate how different this concept is that from a happy calories perspective, all eating is emotional. Because being hungry hurts. In that diet and exercise model, they only want you to eat for physical hunger, because physical hunger means that, okay, now I can have this many calories a day and I only get this daily allotment. And to eat for quote unquote emotional reasons means I'm going to upset that caloric balance sheet. But being hungry hurts when you're trying, and believe me, I know, I was 80 pounds. Being hungry hurts. So if you are eating to soothe a physical hunger, you're eating to feel better. So rather than thinking about things in terms of, am I eating for emotional reasons or physical hunger because I don't want to upset that caloric balance sheet, start thinking about all eating as an attempt to feel better, whether it is an attempt to soothe a physical hunger or some kind of emotional need or whatever it is. And as soon as you stop feeling better, you stop naturally eating. And that also leads it into the place where if you're eating from, am I eating, I want to eat to feel better, that's awesome. And that will always work. It's the eating to not feel bad that never works, because we can never not feel. So this is one of those distinctions where people in the eating disorder world get confused, because they use emotional eating as a way to not feel bad. You can never not feel. So that's never going to work. What you do is you feel bad and then you do what you can to feel better. And if eating a cookie when you skin your knee when you're six and your mom gives you a cookie to help you feel better, that helps you feel better. Yay. And then you stop eating. Because to eat more would not help you continue to feel better. So that's another way that this is radically different, but on a very, very deep level, which is why I'm very grateful to you for giving me the time and the space to be able to take the conversation to those really interpersonal, deep, psychological, spiritual, emotional levels.
Pamela, you rocked my mind with your book. Happy Calories Don't Count is the first one. Food is a four-letter word is the second one. Go to Carmela's site and grab a pen. I'm going to spell this for you. CarmelaRamagalia.com. The G silent, by the way. And you can order them through Amazon and you can get them direct from the printer. But you really shone a spotlight on my relationship with food. I eat multiple times a day because I don't want to get hungry. I don't want to get hungry because I know that if I'm hungry, everything else will stop. I won't be able to focus on anything else. I won't be able to be polite in public. I will just, it is so uncomfortable that that will be all I can think about. So I eat to prevent hunger, which is a bizarre way of doing things. And part of the reason I think I don't like food is because it's in the too hard basket. I'm always looking at food as in, is this good for me? Is it not good for me? What calories are on this? What will be the effects of this? As opposed to it just being food and going along with what my body wants to eat. You know, I love what you said in your book about if you're at a restaurant, and I don't like going out to restaurants because I have no control over what they're going to put on their menu. Control issues.
And you and me both.
Your body. Look, we ended up in a situation which we may not be that thrilled about. You know, I mean, I'm fine if I'm at a Japanese restaurant. I can eat that 3 times a day. But say I'm at another one. Just, you know, and checking with your body and saying, can you help me make a great decision for us here that will make us feel good about ourselves? And hey, if it's not the best we can do right now, that's okay, and I'll make it up to you. But without that pain of, you know, no, you can only have the side salad. No, you can't have the garlic bread. You know, all this kind of things that I believe go through so many women's minds. So you totally blew my mind. You also blew my mind when I have a personal trainer that I've been working with, and I want her body. She has an amazing body because she's so strong. I love her muscle development. I love what her body allows her to do. But even if I did exactly what she did and ate exactly what she ate, I will never have her body because I have my body.
Yep.
And we're taught that, oh, if you go on this diet or you do this amount of exercise, you will look like this particular person, have this kind, particular kind of body. And I love how you point about you can't change a cube into a sphere, and you use it in terms of manifestation, but I can't manifest being 6'3".
Right.
I can't manifest having my trainer's body because I wasn't born into it.
Right. And what's so great about that is that it lets you off the hook.
Yes.
You know, and so like the diet and exercise model, it teaches you that you can have something that you can't have if you just put in the time and effort. And so if you don't have that thing that you want, it's because it's your fault. And what this does is it takes you off the hook. It's like, no, this is the body that you have. Now, that's not to say that the body that you have can't be strong and beautiful, and you can make fabulous changes and create a beautiful state of optimized health, vitality, well-being, beauty, and joy. But the way to do that is to listen to your body.
Yes, yes, because what she just said. It's okay to want a healthy, strong, optimized body that I love looking at in the mirror. It's such a complicated word, isn't it? We have made this so complicated when it doesn't need to be.
Right.
Listen to your body and give it what it needs, and give your heart. Get in alignment with source energy, people.
Yes. I feel the same way. I could talk forever.
One of the things I loved about your book too was my sister is my best friend. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for her. And as far as I'm concerned, she's always right. You know, I mean, if she happened to call me up and say, oh, I've murdered so-and-so, I'd be like, sure, I'll get a shovel and a chainsaw. I'll be right there.
Right.
She can do nothing wrong as far as I'm concerned. But you talk about having a really strong friendship, a loving relationship with your body.
Yep. Yep.
Tell me a little bit more about being a best friends with your body.
It's not as hard or complicated as we make it out to be. So you are awesome at your relationship with your sister. You know, you love her, you respect her. You have skills and tools. And if we have any age at all on us, like, you know, we're not straight out of high school. if we've lived a little bit of life and we've been knocked around a lot, and we have any modicum of experience with navigating the world through relationships, we understand, our skills might be at different levels, but we understand about communication. We understand about respect and, you know, listening to somebody else's point of view. Now, granted, in today's political climate, it might not always be like that. It's not modeled for us so well. So go back to people you respect, mentors you respect, teachers you respect, your best friend. How do you engage in relationship with your best friend? And what are the assumptions you make about your best friend? And how do you relate? And you take all of those skills and tools that you use to cultivate that relationship with your best friend, and you apply it to your body. You make the assumption that your body loves you. You make the assumption that your body has your back. It's a really interesting dichotomy kind of thing. It's like your body is the vehicle through which you experience life. So your body is the thing that people see when they look at you, but we all know you're not really your body, but your body isn't just nothing. Your body isn't just a suit of clothes or something like that. Your body has divine intelligence. Your body has a point of view. And so you can cultivate that and ask it for help and guidance. Like that example from the restaurant, when you understand that your body knows more than you do about, you know, different metabolic processes. I mean, do you know how to digest a banana? I mean, no, but your body does. And what happens when you cut your finger with a kitchen knife? Your body just starts to go to heal itself. It knows how to do all of these amazing things. And so when you start to come from the perspective that your body has a point of view, your body knows how to create the results that you want, your body will help you, then things shift. And it seems, it does, you know, seem a little weird at first to talk to your body, you know, about it. Like that example at the restaurant, it's something, if you've never heard of it before, something, it does seem a little weird, but your body's communicating to you all the time. And some of my clients that have that struggle with the emotional eating thing and then feel bad about the emotional eating and whatever, one of the ways that helps break that cycle, again, is to stop thinking in terms of diet and exercise, but realize that that tummy ache that you have, that tummy ache is your body's way of expressing its displeasure. So then you say, oh, I see what we did here. Okay, I've got a bellyache. I hear you. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to do better next time. So you use all of those physical cues that your body is giving you as information from this vehicle that's your partner in this thing called life. You two are in it together. And that's another thing, like people don't trust their bodies. And like, what if my body would want me to eat something that I think is bad for me? And I ask them, well, why would it? Because anything you eat, your body has to deal with. Your body, anything you do for exercise or don't have to do or don't do for exercise, or anything you eat or don't eat, your body is dealing with. And so your body wouldn't give you any impulses to do anything that would harm it. And so when you can start to look at it, that your body has its own point of view, and start to think about it as just a partner. And a lot of people, they have that kind of relationship with God. You know, they're like, oh, hey, God, you know, help me out here. What direction, what shirt should I wear today? Or, you know, who should I call today? Or guide me in my business or whatever. You can use those same kinds of ideas as a relationship with your body. Oh, hey, body, you know, what do you want to do for a workout today? Oh, hey, body, you know, what do you want to eat today? And let me know. And I'd be happy to help you out. And that idea that your body can support you in some of these life things that we have to deal with. You know, if you're really busy at work and you don't have time to eat, you can say something like, hey, body, I'm sorry, you know, I had to work through lunch. Can you still give me the energy I need for this afternoon to get through the meeting? And then I promise for dinner, I'm going to give you whatever you want. You know, that kind of thing.
I could talk to you for days, which I'm so grateful that you've got a podcast, because I can just listen to you. The podcast is called Food Is Not a Four-Letter Word, And I'm hoping within those podcasts, because I'm mindful of your time, if you listen to the podcast, you might find out what Camilla has in common with Viktor Frankl. He teaches genuine Pilates as opposed to the generic Pilates, which is out there. And you can also ask her about, she'll tell you about why she has no guilty pleasures.
Right.
Guilt, and she has pleasure, but she has no guilty pleasures. And you can find out more on her website. It has been, I could talk to you for days, but I am mindful for time. Thank you so much for giving me, for being present today. It really meant a lot.
Oh, yes, me too. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for giving me the space and the time to be able to share what I need to share with the world.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to pulling this podcast out, you know, not too far in the distance future, when you've got your own talk show, when you're doing a TED talk. Okay, I spoke to her when.
I love you. This is awesome.
Have a wonderful rest today, Camilla. Thank you for being in my life. And I thoroughly recommend the book, Food is Not a Four-Letter Word. And I'm about to go back to where it all started, to Happy Calories Don't Count. Bye.
Bye.